Welcome back to the Villain Edit. I am Monty Ashley.
I'm Ryus Hall.
Hi, Ryus.
Hi, Monty.
Fancy meeting you here in the podcast we do together to get
Imagine that.
On the internet.
It's as though we're in the same room.
Ryus, I want to start with this.
All right, bring it.
I don't like The Bachelorette. I mean the show. Rachel seems fine,
but I also kind of hate this show. I hated The Bachelor. I thought, well, we'll watch The Bachelorette. Maybe that'll be a change. It is not the change I was hoping for.
It is. I will say this. This season is ending a lot smoother than on The Bachelor.
Yeah.
Where they put, like, the women talk back very early on. Because remember, they announced that Rachel was going to be The Bachelorette with, like, 6 episodes to go. And then they just kept trying to distract everybody from what's-his-name, who was a boring bad...
Bachelor.
Bachelor. The boring bad bachelor, a classic story. But, man, this is just...
relentlessly dull?
It is. There's 2 hours of these people every week.
I don't spend 2 hours a week with my own family.
Well, that's so sad.
Well, they live in another state.
That's even sadder.
Oh, I'm sorry.
All right, well...
I didn't mean to bring down the tone.
Let's get through this week. Next week is going to be a nightmare where they remind us of all the losers that we hated and that went away.
Oh, yeah. Remember that one guy? I hated him. We're going to have the Tickle Monster back. We're going to probably see Waboom.
We're going to investigate the DeMario situation in which the show... invited somebody on so that they could surprise him with somebody and then surprised him with that person.
Yes.
All right. This week was A, the contestants meet Rachel's family, and B, fantasy suites.
Ooh.
And the fantasy suites were not as fantastic as they were last year, in my opinion.
First off, I'd like to talk about one element of the show which really annoyed me.
What do you got?
Rachel's skirt.
Yes, you said it had epaulettes in the
first segment.
She was
wearing a skirt which looked as though she had taken a men's military shirt, buttoned it up the front, and maybe cut the sleeves off and made them into pockets.
Is that not where skirts are from?
No, that is not where skirts are from. And it was unlike the other clothes she normally wears, so I think it was something the show came up with that she had to wear. At least I hope so. And it just had these giant gaping... It had epaulettes covering the pockets, and it just kind of poked out on the sides that it did not make her look shaped like a human, and she's pretty human-shaped.
It had another skirt underneath it to provide valuable leg covering.
Yeah, it was just... It was the worst It is the worst outfit I've ever seen on The Bachelor or The Bachelorette.
Now, what about that guy who was dressed like a penguin?
At least I knew where the penguin was from.
All right.
The guy who showed up dressed like a penguin, kind of an idiot. I don't even remember which one he was. But at least he wasn't wearing a skirt with epaulettes on the hips.
Let's tear through this.
All right.
Because I do not wish to spend 2 hours talking about it. I wasn't crazy about spending 2 hours watching it. Or in fact, because I skipped the commercials like 1 hour and 10 minutes.
It was still too much.
That's a very padded episode. Right.
So bad.
Step one. Peter. Peter is somebody she likes a lot. He is here to meet her family.
Peter is the guy with the overprotective mother.
He is also the guy. His new storyline is cannot decide.
Oh, wait. Peter's not the one with the overprotective mother.
Peter got as far as, I am falling in love with you. And he promises that if he really feels it, he's going to say he loves her, and he's going to propose if he feels it.
Right, but he doesn't want to be engaged because he feels like being engaged is the same thing as being married. It's just being married without having set a date for a ceremony. I'm not sure if he's wrong about that, but...
I've kind of had it with his shilly-shallying.
Yeah, what did you come on the show for when it's clearly a show about shopping for husbands?
Yeah, the way the season is structured, you could get away with that for a while, but now you have to look her in the eye and say... I am so in love with you.
Yes, that is your job if you are one of the last 3 contestants on The Bachelor.
Now, one thing cool did happen on her date with Peter, and that is that we got to see her adorable dog.
Yay, and its cast is off its leg.
It's still limping a little, but it is a happy, healthy dog. Everybody likes seeing it.
Yes, I was pretty happy about seeing the dog.
Next date, Eric. Eric seems okay. Family seems to like him.
Which one's Eric? The one from Baltimore?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Unlike Peter, Eric asked for permission to ask for Rachel's hand in marriage, which I think is weird.
Yeah.
Because, all right, I'm not saying it's weird because it's traditional. I'm saying it's weird because it's not traditional. If you want to be traditional, you don't go to the mother and say, I would like permission to ask Rachel to marry me. Traditional, you go to the father and say, I want to marry Rachel. And he either says, marry her or don't. And Rachel doesn't even get a vote. It's not, I want your permission
to ask your daughter to marry me. It's, no.
I am here to ask for your daughter's hand in marriage.
Yeah.
Like, so because it's weird to me that you're not going all the way traditional.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you could go back to the old times and just trade her for some land.
Hmm. So Eric's date seemed to go fine. Brian. Rachel's family does not like Brian at all.
Oh, no. Brian is from Miami. He's the one that says his mother is the most important person in his life, which caused Rachel's mother to give him a good intensive grilling.
Also, he's the opposite of Peter in that he was telling them straight up, oh yeah, I was completely head over heels in love with her, like the third time I saw her.
And his family, her family are not buying that.
Yeah, they're like,
what? Like, you've known her for 2 months. Come on, dude.
You can't possibly love her. At one point, Brian stepped away, and Rachel very...
pointedly?
Well, at that point, I want to say, like, in a level tone of voice, asked them, what is your purpose in asking him questions like that? And they accused her of being extremely emotional. And I don't think she was.
I don't think so. No, I've seen her be extremely emotional. She gets extremely emotional later on this episode.
So I think Rachel's family's kind of buttoned up. There's one dude that kept calling Brian this individual, like
he's like, well, I can tell you care about this individual, and I just think that that's because he had to meet so many of these guys in the last couple days, he can't tell them apart. Yeah. I mean, I've seen them on TV every week, and I can barely tell them apart, so I'm going to give the guy a pass.
So, those were the dates, and then they did the fantasy suites, and I wrote down very little about them.
Well, before the fantasy suites, they had that date at the place that's made out of Dragonstone.
Each of them got a date and then the fantasy suite.
Right.
And then one of them, I honestly don't remember who, they went to a really far-off Spanish
monastery. It was a monastery.
And they had to go down this bridge, and Raya said, hey, that was on Game of Thrones. And it was. It was on last week's episode.
Yep. It's that place where...
Nope. Spoiler.
It was on the episode before last week. But anyway, it's a place in the episode where you might see someone living if they had a dragon.
It's a really cool location, but I'm amazed that Game of Thrones flew everybody out here just for basically a transition scene. They didn't use where the bridge starts or the bridge goes to, but the bridge itself, we need everybody on.
It's a great looking bridge.
It is. I'm just worried that the PR team of the monastery and bridge are like, finally things are coming together. We had two national television appearances over 2 weeks. This will never end.
Yeah, it's weird because it's a super, super long bridge. I mean, it looks like it's maybe a mile.
Yeah.
Maybe more. And it goes to this little island. And apparently at the top of the only thing on the island is this old church that doesn't look very big. It seems like a weird place to build a church.
Well, I believe they were trying to be out of the way, you know, like hermits and stuff.
Well, yeah, but...
Cut yourself off from the world.
Yeah, maybe.
Then there were... I honestly don't remember. There weren't any cool fantasy suites like last season with the yurts
just
where
you
could see the national anthem.
It was basically the national anthem.
I meant to say Northern Lights, and I realize those are two completely different concepts and only have the word end in common.
That's okay. It's all right. It's super hot out today, and our brains are a little baked.
My only note from this entire hour was that when Eric tried to skip along with Rachel, he did not look like a guy to whom skipping comes naturally.
No, he was trying to skip along with her to be playful, but there was a lot of clomping. He's not a natural born skipper.
Which, that's fine. We can't all
skip. Most people aren't.
I'm a great skipper. I am.
Is that why we live near the water? Are you calling me Gilligan?
Yes.
Oh, man.
I walked into that one. I didn't have to do any work.
You're so lazy these days.
It's so hot, you guys.
It is so hot. And the next show we watched is another show that annoys us. So you're going to get some more vitriol. I hope you're enjoying it.
What show is that?
That would be Ink Master.
Oh, the show about the professional tattoo artists that do really good work and you really want to get ink done from them?
No, the professional tattoo artists who do good work, but who just I want nothing to do with, ever.
I know it's a cliche that tattoo artists have a lot of tattoos, but these guys really all seem to have a lot of tattoos all the way up onto their face and scalp. And
not all of them.
Not all of them, but enough of them. And a lot of them, it doesn't look like it was done aesthetically. Like,
well, you think they did it themselves?
I think a lot of them show very poor tattoo placement ability based on where they place their tattoos on themselves.
I agree. There's some, yeah.
I want that. I would like, if you are covered with tattoos, for the tattoos to kind of present a unified whole and not just, well, I realized I had a couple square inches free on the back of my left hand, so that's where I did that.
Yep, so now I have a wasp.
Yep. The guy who came back is Christian Buckingham, who I don't remember at all. He made the final three one season, but he got...
One season, and people are upset because, oh my god, they're bringing finalists back to destroy us.
But we already know that he got final three, but did not make final two because of the audience vote. He was beaten by Clean Rock One, who, we're just speaking for the entire audience, we're sick of that dude, and we're not going to be happy when he gets brought back.
We are not.
Especially if he's brought back on the last episode to give him the best chance to win.
Ah, he's such a horrible person.
So, this episode, they were testing ingenuity, which, as usual, means nothing.
No. None of the words they say mean what you think they mean.
In this case, obviously, the best test of ingenuity is a big sheet of bubble wrap that everybody has to inject colored water into.
Yes, it's hanging on the wall. You got to inject colored water into each bubble, using each bubble as a pixel to form an image.
So it's not regular pixels, which are a straight grid. These are offset.
Right. It's bubble wrap. Yeah. You know what it looks like. And I kind of liked the idea of it, but I did not like...
I liked the aesthetics of the stuff that all came out, because, like, this is a bad-looking snake. Well, I've been playing computer games for a long time, and in the early 90s, we were delighted if we had a snake that level of pixelation.
Fair enough.
One team, Allegory Arts, broke the rules by using whiteout on some of their bubbles.
Yeah, so they made some snowflakes by whiting out some bubbles, and people were angry about that. But I thought that was the only actual show of ingenuity that they had.
Yeah, the only guy that was angry is the one bald guy who's angry at everybody all the time. And I think he might have been the one who was complaining about the other team cheating.
Oh, yeah, it's the guy from Original Trilogy.
Yeah. Classic Trilogy.
Classic Trilogy.
This guy is so angry and argumentative, and yet, in one of the argument scenes, the other person makes him look smart and reasonable, which I thought was great.
Yeah, I was like, oh my god, these people are all awful.
There was an argument about what to do with a human canvas who doesn't like what you're doing. The two options are sweet talk him. Say, no, no, this is going to be great. We'll work with you. We want you to be happy, but what I would suggest is we do this horse in brown instead of bright blue, because it'll last longer.
Mm-hmm.
And the other option is, shut up! You take this tattoo the way I drew it, or you walk, and I tattoo myself.
Yes.
And Classic Trilogy guy, although he was very angry, was too nice for the other team. It was like,
Yeah, she ended up getting the tattoo she wanted, even though he himself felt like disagreed with the aesthetic decisions he was being forced to make.
Yeah.
But the girl had brown skin, and giving her a brown tattoo seems, yes, it would last longer, but I think that after it fades a little, it would blend in more.
And also, based on what we were shown, they told her it was going to be a blue tattoo. And then when they started, they said, we're going to do brown instead of blue. And then complained that she objected.
Yeah.
So that was not...
Anyway, she got her tattoo in a grayish blue, which was fine.
We appear to have skipped the results of the Flash Challenge. You don't care, neither do we.
No.
The winners was Black Spade. They did a B. And they were praised for the accuracy of their honeycomb in the background.
Which is ridiculous. You have a grid right there, and it's all laid out in hexagons.
Yeah, because it's not a grid, because it's nested like bubble wrap. Doing a hexagon is the easiest thing in the world, which they did, and I think that's a good idea.
Yeah.
Look at what your medium is. See if there's...
Find its weaknesses.
Yeah. Like, what will this medium be good at? Another team actually did shading by slowly upping the amount of blue ink as they went up.
Yeah, and it looked really good.
There were some good ideas. So Black Spade won, and then we saw a scene where they stood next to a pool table holding pool cues, discussing strategy.
Right, discussing who they were going to give the skulls to, now, who they wanted to screw over.
This is always a dumb scene. But I realized, I think this scene is always at the pool table. Because last week it was,
they
too.
They always have this conversation while holding pool cues, but you never really see them shooting any pool.
They shot one ball last week, but it really stood out as, I don't care where this is going. I can't even tell whose turn it is. So I'm really hoping now that they're just consciously always putting it at the pool table. You know, because it represents gamesmanship.
You know what I think would be a good test of ingenuity?
What's that?
You give them all tattoo guns that are missing one crucial part that they can reproduce with something in the studio. And whoever can get a working tattoo gun out of it gets to pass.
Do they actually have to tattoo with something?
No, it just has to work. They don't have to tattoo with it, because
I don't want
that seems like a recipe for disaster.
I don't want somebody getting a tattoo with the broken tattoo gun.
No. It's just, here's a tattoo gun, here's a rubber band and a paper clip. Something is wrong with the tattoo gun. Can you fix it?
I like it. It has occurred to me, I don't like the element of strategy where everyone says, whatever the toughest tattoo is, I'm going to give it to whoever's worst at it. Why are you setting people up to have bad tattoos? This isn't going on an actual person, jerks.
Yeah, that's really another reason that the people on this show are pieces of crap.
No one ever says, I gave myself the tattoo I most wanted to do, and then, because I care at all about my customers, I laid out that tattoo so everybody should get a good tattoo, and I expect to do the best one. No one ever does that.
No, because they're all too insecure and freaky.
So, the tattoo... This time, one person had to tattoo for 3 hours, then the other person had to tattoo for 3 hours. It's going to be New School, which Classic Trilogy is very excited about, because that's all they do.
Right, that's all they do every challenge. Whether they intend to or not, they do New School.
And they started off this episode saying, we got to get out of our comfort zone. That's the thing they keep telling us.
And the challenge was in their comfort zone.
So they were like, great, we don't have to worry about that for at least 1 week. All right, going through, the new team, whose name I didn't write down, did kind of a magical unicorn. Sorry? Wow.
No, they did not do the unicorn.
No, I know. Raccoon is what I meant.
Yes, they were doing a raccoon... It's okay, honey.
Let's go, you talk.
I know. They were doing a raccoon who was also a wizard, and the girl wanted it on her ribs, but it would not have worked on her ribs.
When they asked her to move it, she was like, I don't know, I'm getting married, my in-laws don't want me to have any visible tattoos, I don't know. Well, I do have one giant tattoo on one thigh, so I guess my other unmarked thigh will be fine. They're like, yes, that's all we wanted, is for you to say thigh.
Right, and for wizard, they went with more of a Harry Potter theme than a Gandalf theme.
Yeah, it reminded me a lot of, like, a badger with a Hufflepuff scarf, maybe casting a spell.
Right, except they colored it striped to make it and gave it ears to make it look more raccoony. It didn't look very raccoony to me, but it was a good cartoon character, wizard. Yeah. It was super cute. It had a little pink cloud behind it. I liked it a lot, and I think the girl that got it is going to like it. So
it had a raccoon tail, definitely. The raccoon bandit mask facial coloring wasn't really there, which is weird.
Oh, you know what it looked like? The face? It looked just like the cat in Josie and the Pussycats.
Sebastian. Nice. All right, I'm in. I'm back on board. All right. Old Town Inc. They did a skateboarding astronaut, which I personally thought was too realistic to be New School, but I guess I was wrong.
Yeah, everybody loved it. It was pretty real. It was realistic. It was an astronaut on a skateboard with the moon and some galaxies behind him. Pretty standard stuff. Nothing particularly new or innovative about it.
Yeah. They end up winning.
Yeah.
See, Allegory, they did a platypus wearing a lion headdress, kind of, but it...
Yeah, the guy wanted a platypus killing a lion. So
which is an awesome idea. I want to know the backstory of why he wants a platypus killing a lion.
So what
I don't know the symbolism of a platypus at all.
So what they ended up giving him was a platypus with a bow and a quiver full of arrows, with a lion head kind of on top of his head, like he was wearing at home as a trophy. It had an arrow coming out of one eye. It was fine. They got yelled at a lot for their poor line work or something, but was the tattoo the guy wanted.
We are at least getting to a point where some of the judge critiques are stuff I can't see myself. Like, Oliver Peck and Chris Nunez are tattoo experts, and they will be able to say, this line work is bad, this coloration is bad, you did this part wrong.
But I don't see it as much until it's pointed out to me, and then I'm not, like, as impressed with it as they are.
Yeah, like, that's like on
Black... Yeah, if that tattoo was on me and I wanted a tattoo of a platypus, I'd be happy with it. Yeah,
that's what happened with Black Spade, where, to me, it looked fine. The person wanted a cupcake monster, there was a cupcake monster.
It was chasing three blueberries that were terrified.
There was a dead blueberry in its frosting hair. I thought it looked great, but they kept going on about bad saturation in the background, okay.
Yeah, whatever.
Classic Trilogy did that punk unicorn we talked about. Pins and Needles did a crazy monkey drummer.
Oh, they sort of did, didn't they?
Yeah.
It was what you would expect of a cartoon monkey playing drums.
Yep.
It was cute. It was okay. They got in trouble because their colors they used were too close to the colors of his skin.
Yeah.
But what... if that is a problem for him, he can get that darkened up easily and he'll still have a cute tattoo.
Artistic Skin Design was supposed to, I think they were the ones whose person said, I want a heavy metal band. And I complained a lot because if you like heavy metal enough to get a tattoo, why don't you want a specific band?
Yeah.
Like you're a fanatical fan of the genre, but no one in particular within it.
So he got a zombie playing a guitar and a zombie singing into a microphone.
And mostly it was okay. My biggest problem with it was that they were green zombies and there was a real solid blue background, which looked kind of muddy. But what everyone kind of dwelt on was this one thumb coming from behind the guitar in a hilariously wrong direction.
Yeah, it was... It's a zombie. I thought maybe its thumb had fallen off and was on its way flying out because it was not in a position you would normally find a thumb.
Whenever you want to really have fun critiquing a tattoo, study the anatomy of where's that leg actually supposed to connect to?
Yeah, well, why is that hand so much bigger than that other hand? That's not foreshortening.
Boneface Inc. Now, last week... Boneface said that Hobo Inc. was a great artist, and Boneface was
a
good technician. So I'm like, all right, Hobo Inc., Hobo's going to carry you here. But walking into this one, Boneface said, I'm going to have to finish this entire tattoo in 3 hours, so Hobo doesn't have to do anything.
Yeah, that was weird.
So it turns out Hobo doesn't do color at all.
Oh,
he's never done color.
Yeah, Hobo has never done a color tattoo.
Well, then what's he doing here?
This is not a show where you come in and say, I don't have this skill that is vital to the competition. Come on, dude.
I like having two tattoo artists that complement each other. So you can say, well, he's better at backgrounds, I'm better at foregrounds. or I'm better at line work, he's better at color. But you have to both be able to do everything.
Yeah.
So they did three bad-looking kittens.
Oh, these kittens bad-looking. First off, they weren't cartoony. They just had giant heads.
Yeah, which kittens kind of do.
Yeah, but these were bigger than usual. These were some kind of skull deformity kittens, especially because their eyes were all different shapes. One of them was supposed to be winking, but I think he just looked like he had one eye.
One of them was green and probably wasn't supposed to be yellow.
Yeah.
It was bad.
It was awful. They did have a ball of yarn in that tattoo that was nice. I thought the ball of yarn was well done, but the cats, oh no. And that's not even how a cat's head attaches.
And they knew it was bad, too, which is what I liked. In the jury of your peers, everyone was saying, so what's the worst one? Well, Boneface Inc. is the worst one. Boneface says, yeah, that's the worst one. So they still kind of debated everyone else's, but...
they sent Boneface down, because...
Because if someone admits they belong down there, just send them.
Yeah.
There was one other tattoo. Unkindness did a really fun mad scientist coming out of a portal.
Oh, yeah, this guy wanted a mad scientist on his head coming out of a portal, and there was some kind of a magical glowing blue device he was reaching for. I don't know what it was, but they did say at some point. And it was exactly what you would think. And they almost won. They were praised because they had two life sources. They had the green portal opening up behind him, and they had the blue light in front of him, and all of the lights were reflecting off the right places, and they really liked that.
Yeah, I liked it. It was super dynamic.
It was exactly what the guy wanted.
So the bottom three were Boneface Inc., Black Spade, and Artistic Skin Design. You've already forgotten what they are. That's three bad kittens... Yeah. And Cupcake Monster and Zombie Band.
Yes.
Now, the first thing that happens is the judges ask Bonefaces, what happened? And he says, well, we did a really bad tattoo. The only thing I will say in my dispade, great drawing, and they still managed to do a bad tattoo. Remember, this is the one that looked fine to me, but had technical errors.
Right, the background wasn't saturated enough. Whereas I thought the background was supposed to look like silky clouds and therefore shouldn't be oversaturated.
But this was a great move by Boneface because Black Spade was tricked into immediately saying, no, we stand by that. Our tattoo is dope. And that outrages judges when you don't know that you've done a bad job.
Right. If you don't recognize how bad your work is, you're laughing in the face of the judges.
Like, they want somebody who... if they do badly, knows why they did badly. And Black Spade just, no, this was great. And kind of the same thing with Artistic Skin Design. They said, the thumb's not that bad. Chris Nunez says, the only thing that's going to fix that is a laser. And now they're outraged.
Oh, and then they're like, how dare you say our tattoo should be lasered off? Blah, 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 blah,
like,
blah, blah.
Well, it should, sorry. So Boneface Inc. only got the very briefest critique, but all the judges voted for them to go home because it actually is the worst tattoo.
It is. It might be the worst tattoo. Nah, it's not the worst tattoo of any season.
It's not certainly not the worst tattoo of this season.
I think it might be the worst tattoo of this season.
Oh, I don't think so. I don't remember that one really jacked up hand.
Yeah. And that warrior princess. That warrior princess is the worst. Okay.
So, Boneface, I liked you. Hobo Inc., I liked you. I liked Boneface's final thoughts, which included... we did the worst tattoo of the day, but we're not the worst shop. I don't think you are, but you're not the best shop, dog. Out you go. Before we continue, I wish to bring up exciting news in the world of Face Off.
Face Off!
Spin-off.
Spin-off? What, is this a game where they remove tops from people? Like hula hoops? It's a hula hooping contest, isn't it?
Girls Gone Wild is not a reality show.
Says you.
This is a show called Game Face, which appears to... it's certainly in the Face-Off family, and it looks like it's going to be a short-form reality show instead of a long-form reality show. So they're just going to bring on three all-stars. All-stars is what they call anyone who has ever been on Face-Off in any capacity. And they're going to do a one-episode challenge, cutting down as you go.
Yeah.
You know, Chopped style or Forged in Fire.
Right.
So I'm super excited by this because I like almost everyone who's been on Face Off.
Up until this season, I've been with you.
And I like seeing cool monster makeup and stuff.
Yeah, me too. More monster makeup shows, I'm all in.
Now, you want to talk about Face Off or Fortune Fire first?
Let's talk about Face Off.
Okay.
Because we don't really want to close with that because we didn't take any notes on it.
I have gone back and taken some notes.
Oh, aren't you clever?
The theme was possessed possessions. They went to a thrift store and bought some junk.
Spray painted it black, covered it with fake cobwebs.
Gave it sharp lighting from above and claimed that made it look spooky. Really, it just looked like a tricycle or old typewriter or something.
Yeah, with some dust on it. But that's okay.
So everybody got one thing and they're supposed to create a backstory on why this item is possessed, haunted doll rules, it was owned by a dead person, and how it is now possessing someone new, and that's the person they're going to be making up, and that person has to interact with the prop.
Right.
Most of them did not do a lot of prop interaction, just carrying it doesn't count in my opinion. Nelson, who is the guy with a beard, he was the foreperson of Ethereal Effects.
He told us this a lot. He's very proud of being in power, of his power.
All of his interviews started with, as the shop runner, or whatever phrase he was using, it's up to me to
blah, blah, blah.
Like, keep the morale up, or whatever. He did, I thought, the best interaction. He had a violin, and his person was sawing at their forearm with the bow, so he had cool wounds down there.
Right.
I don't recall what his face looked like, and I'm not going to look it up.
It was masky, and it had that big wig she was trying to hide behind.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
It was...
There was some wig hiding.
It wasn't great, but Monty liked it best.
Did I?
You talked about it a lot while we were watching it.
All right, good for me. All right, let's go to Twisted Six first. They are, of course, a three-person team that has lost every single round.
Yes.
What they did this time was Casey had the haunted camera. Her face, nothing to... I wasn't that big a fan of.
No, her idea was... this camera belonged to a serial killer who took pictures of his victims. The camera captured their souls. And now they're trying to... Now when she uses the camera, they ooze out of it and attack her.
But the coolest part of her makeup, I thought, was that she did burnt hands.
Yeah, they did really good burn makeup on her hands and arms. The face makeup, it was pretty bad. It looked like something that you would do after you read that book about stage makeup. You know.
Yeah. But
the one you got from the library when you were 10.
But I want to stick on how much I really liked the hands, because you could see she was holding the camera. This is where the burn started, at the fingertips. But her whole hands are charred black. And then it kind of gets to red going up the arms.
Yeah.
It told a real strong story.
Yeah.
Also on Twisted Six was Andrew. He did a bulgy, what I have written down as a bulgy-headed baby.
Yeah, Andrew had a haunted tricycle. His story was that a little boy had been abandoned in an attic and starved to death. And all he had in the attic with him was his tricycle, so he, what did he do with it? So, the next kid that found the tricycle was possessed by his spirit and turned into, like, a starving baby-looking thing.
And it looks really cool. Yeah. Like, the eye sockets are huge, looking like a skull. And what I like is that the head bulges forward out of the, top of the out of the front of the forehead instead of the top.
Yeah.
Normally, when somebody is bulgy-headed... In makeup, they go straight up or out in all directions. This is out in one direction. It kind of reminds me of Loeb from Freakazoid.
Okay.
Voiced by David Warner. And the third person on Twisted Six was Phil, who I... Sorry, Phil, I still write you down as Suspender Guy every time.
Phil did a woman... Phil's drawing was... Or Phil's object was a baby carriage. The story he went with was that a woman had, that in the 1940s, a housewife, after coming home from working in the factory, was giving her child a bath, got distracted, and the baby drowned, and then it haunted its baby carriage.
not super well connected to the story.
Lots of, I'd like to add, there were a lot of abused children in this episode. Yeah. It's like, that was everybody's go-to for why an object is haunted. And it was
KC's explanation was, she died from abusive parents, which is a polite way to put it, but...
Murdered by their parents.
Yeah.
Beaten to death, I believe, because there were a lot of bruises on that makeup.
Phil also had a dead baby in the baby carriage that everybody was very excited about.
Everybody
to
was
work
excited.
On.
He made a foam dead baby. It looked like something you'd buy at a Halloween store, so yeah.
Phil made a really good choice while he was painting his look. He looked at it and said, "This looks too much like a zombie," and went back and used more flesh tones, and I think came to a much more interesting result than if he'd gone with the
full
death.
Yeah, if he had gone with the full death thing, it would have just been bad. As it was just kind of, it was sort of sad, but, yeah.
Now the other team, Ethereal Effects.
Mm-hmm.
We already talked about the guy with the violin, which...
All right, that's the violin lady.
Yeah,
that's a lady.
A huge wig, mostly hiding the face. Now, Suzanne.
Oh, Suzanne. Suzanne's object was a...
clock.
Clock. She said, oh, this looks like the kind of clock you give someone on their anniversary. I guess there's a clock anniversary, like there's a gold, silver...
She...
clock-iversary.
I think she kind of has a tendency to go four steps of inspiration and not explain how she got there.
Mm-hmm.
Like... clock reminded her of time, which reminded her of calendars, which reminded her of anniversaries.
Yeah, it was weird. Anyway, so for her makeup design, she decided that it was a woman who got this clock for her anniversary, and the clock is evil, and it is sucking her through a portal, and the parts of her that are sticking out on the front of the portal are unaffected, but the parts that have already been sucked through the portal are all agey and gross.
So to make this work, she cut out what looks like kind of a miniature Stargate, a big circle of plexiglass with a couple holes in it for a head and hands.
Right. And she used some electrical tape to make some clock hands on it, but no numbers or anything, and they don't really show up at all because it's black electrical tape against a black costume.
Yeah, it does not look like a clock, and... the next thing she had to do was have her model stick her head partway through the hole and then do kind of a two-face makeup where only part of the face is all gross. And that didn't work, A, because it's very hard to hold the head at exactly the right spot in the hole to sell that gimmick.
Because B, she faced it out so that the only parts you could see were the parts sticking out of the portal, which were the parts of the beauty makeup.
Yeah, when you look at it staged the way she wanted, you can't see... the special effects makeup, because it's all facing away. And then when you can see the special effects makeup, it's not done very well.
No, it looks really heavy and saggy, and it's not a flesh color. It's... I don't know if it's she's supposed to be turning into stone, or...
it's
hardwood, or... I don't know what she's turning into.
It was a very conceptual idea that seemed like a bad idea right away, and turned out to be. Now... the other conceptual idea that I really liked was Kirsten. I have been saying forever that people rely too much on prosthetics on this show.
He has been. He wants to see an episode where it's all just makeup and face painting.
Well, I want to see somebody say, you know what? My concept doesn't require a head shaped differently than regular people.
Right.
I don't need to add horns or a big funny nose. And this is what Kirsten did, she said.
Right. Her possessed object was a radio. And so her story was, the guy who works at an antique shop turns on the haunted radio and the music goes into his ears and he becomes possessed through his ears.
So she doesn't want to do big goofy ears. She wanted to work on careful veining, painting veining onto the cheeks so you can see where the... evil has entered and see it affecting the face. So she spent 2 days practicing...
painting veins on her own arms.
Yeah, saying, well, that looks good. It'll look like that.
And
then she did get convinced by the mentor session that she should add some kind of prosthetics, so she added a black eye.
Right, and she was going to add, like, a fat lip, because the kid that owned the radio, of course, had been killed by his parents.
Yeah.
Because everybody on this show was killed by their parents. It's really kind of a depressing week.
Yeah. Well, everybody's possessed. This is sad. These are ghosts.
Oh, sad ghosts.
Now, like I say, I love the idea of somebody saying, I'm so good at beauty makeup, I'm going to do this right. You're going to love this. But we didn't see much of her during doing the actual application.
And I think that a problem, one of the problems she had was that her model was African American. And she painted the veins in really dark colors. So unless you're close up to it, it didn't show up.
Yeah, it looked great on her skin, but her skin is not of the same shade as her model.
Right.
So her model just kind of looks like he has big splots of red on him.
Yeah.
He's also wearing a shirt, even though we saw her airbrushing his torso and saying, this looks awful, which it did.
Yeah, it did look pretty bad. So shirt for him.
He's only got one prosthetic, the one little lump to be a black eye, and it has huge edges that I can see from here.
And I'm sitting on the couch like 4 feet from the computer, and I can see them.
Like, I'm looking right now at the official picture.
This is the best that they're going to release.
And it's...
Yeah, and I think that she should have based his skin out in a slightly lighter color. I mean, there is some kind of greenish stuff there, but like a... I don't know.
Yeah. The
something needs to make those veins show up more.
There's no story here. Like, it's just, even if I see all the makeup, which is on the side of his head and not the front.
It just looks like he's got a really bad ear infection.
Yeah.
She should have made raised veins and glued them down.
I would have loved that. Just sculpt some, like, little clay snakes things.
Yeah, and stick them on his face. Yeah. Or... there's other ways of doing that. They involve yarn, and it's way cool.
And the last person is Faina, who I have written down here as a bald guy.
Yeah, yeah, the guy with the typewriter.
Yep.
Now, Faina's story is a war reporter is killed. A soldier who is betrayed by his commander finds the typewriter and possesses it. And whoever owns the typewriter, he possesses them and forces them to write his story. Which I thought was kind of a cool idea.
Yeah. I did think that she made huge, unrealistic ears, but those turn out to be the ears attached to the actual model. Sorry, guy.
Sorry, model.
My mistake. You look great. By the way, the guest judge this week was Cheyenne Jackson.
From American Horror Story?
I guess.
All right. Cheyenne Jackson dropped the hint that on American Horror Story, in between takes, sometimes the makeup artists have little spotlight challenges.
Which is great.
Which I love. Let's see. So, the thing that I liked the best about Typewriter Guy's makeup was not the face makeup, which was really good, but was mostly paint, except they made him some larger jawbones and stuff. It was his hands.
Yeah.
Because his fingers were bleeding, and his fingernails looked like they had been torn off from being forced to type constantly.
Yeah.
I liked that. That was pretty gross.
It wasn't generic damage. You could see that it was damage from pounding the tips of the fingers into the keys.
Yeah, I thought that was a great touch, and I liked it.
So, it was clear that one of two people was going home. Either Suzanne for her clock idea, or Kirsten for her no idea. Mm. And I was hoping Kirsten stayed just because I had always wanted to see somebody do the no prosthetics idea. And she did. Suzanne went home. And I'm sorry, Suzanne, but...
Suzanne seems like more... My impression of Suzanne has been that she is more of a fabricator than a makeup person.
That could be.
Remember, she built that alien egg. She built that time portal. She seems like she's more of a stage makeup person than a film makeup person, if that makes sense.
Sure.
So the impression I got from her.
Well, we don't have to worry about her anymore.
No. I hope she finds good work and gets good enough and gets much better at it. We see her on an All-Star season and are like, oh my god, she's so good now.
And congratulations to Twisted Six for finally winning
for
a challenge.
Finally winning a challenge now that they are... Not the Twisted Six, the Turgid Three.
Forged in Fire.
Yay!
This episode featured the four basic archetypes of Forged in Fire contestants.
Yep.
You had Tom, who is a nerd. The first thing he said was D&D and Lord of the Rings.
I love swords. I've loved swords since D&D and Lord of the Rings.
Two, Andrew, the redneck.
I got me a forge.
Chad, the marine.
We never leave a man behind. I'm running out of these. So I hope there's not too many more competitors.
Well, good news. The last guy was Tim, who explained that he was an aspiring voiceover artist and gave us five or six accents.
Well, it was one accent, but he would say, "This is my Cockney accent, Governor." And then he would say, "This is my Australia accent, Governor." It was... I don't think he's burning up the world of voice actors, but God bless him.
I liked him. I suspect him also of being an SCA guy, although he didn't mention it.
Nah, maybe.
The challenge was to forge a Bowie knife, and I was excited because I did not know the technical definition of a Bowie knife.
What is that?
I knew it was used by Jim Bowie, or possibly Bowie, when he killed like 15 people in a knife fight.
Yeah. So it must be able to kill.
The essential... I know it's a big, thick knife. The essential point we were explained to, it has a clip point with a false edge. And that's the thing down at the point away from the blade.
Hmm.
So yeah, the blade curves up, and then you have a curve in the other direction for the clip point.
Yes.
I'm sure that made perfect sense, especially with my useful hand gestures.
Those hand gestures were great.
Also, they had to make a D-guard, which freaked people out.
Yeah. A D-guard is one of those guards that wraps around your hand. You know, you see them on rapiers and not fencing rapiers. Those have a flying saucer-shaped guard. But you know what I mean. In your better fencing movies.
Now, Tim turned out to be a gadget guy.
Tim has got so many gadgets and techniques, it is amazing. One of the techniques, the one I liked the most, was testing the steel with a magnet to see if it's hot enough, because when it gets hot enough, it demagnetizes. I didn't know that, and that was a fun piece of science to learn.
My favorite thing is that he had a straightening jig. When a blade comes out of the quench, sometimes it is slightly warped. Some people's solution to that is to put the tip in a vise and shove the handle in the direction they want it to go.
Until it breaks.
Yes. Now, Tim had actually quenched 30 minutes before he needed to, so he had this whole rigmarole about putting a big flat piece of metal on top of it and clamping it down and letting it straighten itself out.
While it cooled.
Yeah.
And that seemed to work really well, I think. Yep. Did he get in trouble for his blade being burnt? No.
Not here, no. That's
it worked
fine.
Really well, and it did not seem to put a huge amount of pressure on any one segment of the blade.
Yeah. I want to talk about Chad's quench for a second, because this is a... When you're watching a show like this, you always feel special if you comment on something, and then the judges
comment. Like... And what was it about Chad, he's the Marine... about the quench on Chad's blade that you didn't like going in.
His first quench, he was explaining that he was slowly cycling it in and out of the fire. He took it out and was about to quench it when I noticed the length of the blade, instead of being bright white, was kind of a dull red. And the tip was still black.
It was still black. That is not a blade that you can put in a quench, because if your blade is not hot enough, the metal will crystallize inside and your knife will blow up. The tip will not harden unless it's super hot when it goes into the oil.
Right. I don't know a lot about this, but I do know you get your metal super, super hot, then it goes in the oil, and then it hardens. Somehow. Magically.
Magically. Yeah.
But his tip had not even changed color.
Yeah, it was still... Yeah, so he had to go back into the furnace a couple more times. Yeah. A bunch more times before he could actually... And re-quench.
And he ended up going home at round one. Not for a bad blade, but he still had a bunch of hammer marks on it because he had gotten too excited.
Yeah.
Like, he polished it, but didn't notice that there were still big hammer marks in it.
Well, it was also... I felt like... He was the one that didn't want to use the power tools, wasn't he? And he just got carried away being the village blacksmith.
It's more fun pounding it out yourself. Grow up. He also had an underdeveloped ricasso, which is a term we now know. Define ricasso.
The ricasso is the part that is at the end of the blade and before the start of the handle. It's that little flat area.
Yeah.
That doesn't cut, but it's just there it to just, keep your hand from... I don't know what it's there for, but it looks nice.
And what you want is a clearly defined ricasso where you say, here is where I stopped sharpening, and then it widens out to the thickness of the tang.
Mm-hmm.
But he just kind of had a section there. A lot of weeks, he would have done plenty well enough to go into round two.
Absolutely. But this week, everybody was really close at the end of round.
Yeah, the blades all looked good.
The SCA guy.
Tom.
Tom. His idea for how to make a D-guard was different from everyone else's.
Everyone else was going to add the D-guard later. He was like, I'm going to get ahead in round one. So he had a big hunk of metal just sticking off the edge.
That he was going to bend back around and make the D-guard, which seems like a good idea, but then the rest of the blade had cooled down and he had to try and reheat that end of the blade.
Which he did with a blowtorch.
And the blowtorch was not adjusted correctly because it was like a flamethrower. It was shooting fire like a foot out.
So it got way too hot, and he decided, as far as I could tell, I'm just going to cool this in the water.
He said, I'm just going to put this in this water and let it cool a little bit. And at which point, everyone in the house, you, me, yeah, and the dog, screeched, don't quench in the water! And then he quenched in the water.
Because he wasn't thinking of it as quenching. I think he was just thinking of it as cooling. But really what he did was quench, and quench badly. So now his D-guard and the little spar of metal opposite the D-guard and his handle, they're all extra brittle.
Yeah.
So when the challenge came along to chop through a nail and slice up some fish...
Why would you chop through a nail? It was like a big nail. It was a 10-penny nail.
Yeah, it's one of those... They take the knife and they set it edge first on top of the nail and then wang the back of it with a hammer.
Yeah, that's not how you should treat a knife. That is disrespectful to the blades. And I understand that the test is not about what the blade does to the nail, but about what the nail does to the blade. But even so, why are you hitting a blade with a hammer?
That's not... Bowie knives were not designed for cutting through nails. They were designed for cutting through Texans.
Yes.
So, Tom went home at that round. Sorry, Tom.
He's the one whose handguard broke off because it was brittle?
Yep.
Yeah, sorry, dude.
That left us with Andrew and Tim.
Now, which ones are those guys again?
Andrew we have listed as redneck. Tim we have listed as aspiring voiceover artist, right, although he did not do many fun voices.
Right, and what kind of a sword did they have to make?
Oh, a shamshir.
Oh, a shamshir.
You know a shamshir.
Yeah, he plays the pan flute.
Nice. Very timely.
Thank you.
A shamshir is a long, curved saber that, if you look at the example, is one smooth curve that goes almost into a full U shape.
It's like a crescent moon.
Yeah. If you look at the ones these guys make, it's actually mostly straight with a couple of bends, but whatever, it's fine.
I think theirs looked exactly like they were supposed to.
I felt that Andrew's in particular had kind of a bend in it. Rather than one smooth curve.
I did not feel that way. Oh, do you want to fight?
No, it's too hot to
fight. It is too hot to fight. Never mind. Take that. I take that back.
All right. Then I win. Hooray!
So then they chopped some things with the samshears.
And you were very angry about one of the things they chopped.
Was I?
Yes. Because for the... strength test.
Oh, they had to chop up horse skulls.
Yes.
And those were nicely cleaned. I mean, they weren't like slaughterhouse horse skulls like you would expect on a show like this. These were nicely cleaned, bleached horse skulls that they probably bought from like Skulls International or something that has nice skulls. And I felt like they probably could have gotten some cheaper skulls. I'm very fond of skulls.
These skulls got chopped up all to heck.
Oh, yeah. They just exploded in shards of bone. It was really impressive, and I understand why they did it.
Andrew's shamshir was apparently a little heavier than Tim's. Tim's was a light, whippy around. Watching the challenges, the only difference appeared to be that Tim's didn't go as far into the side of beef when it stabbed.
Yeah. They were very closely matched.
But Doug explained that he hit a bone.
Sure.
However, after the horse skulls got chopped up, Tim's sword got a bit of a bend in it.
Just a little one. And it was kind of, I mean, it's hard to tell because they're crescent moon shaped. Yeah. But yeah.
So that meant Andrew won, although they still gave a speech about how much they really liked Tim's Shamshir.
Yeah. The Shamshir is like a cavalry.
Yeah.
It's like a cavalry sword, except bent more.
Yeah.
Which is probably why they were testing it on horse skulls.
I do feel that they're running out of realistic-looking weapons, and I want them to go all the way in on it. It was season one, I think, when they did the Xena's Frisbee thing.
That is a chakram, and it was an actual weapon. Okay. But yes, Xena's Frisbee thing does pretty much sum it up.
But nobody goes around forging chakrams unless it's to sell to Xena fans.
Yeah, nobody does that. Who would do that?
So I would like them to start getting silly. Specifically, the flying guillotine would be fantastic.
Yes, I want to see Doug Marqueta test a flying guillotine.
I bet he would enjoy doing that.
He would. He will say, it will decapitate. Oh, when they cut the heads off those ballistic dummies last week?
Yeah.
He saved those heads and gave them to his son. There was a picture of it on the internet.
One of them, the sword went through the jawbone. Yeah. That one's kind of grotesque.
Yeah. Anyway.
I think we ran out of shows.
Yeah, I think we're out of shows. And thank you for joining us.
Yes, thank you very much. And thank you for joining me, Rias.
You're welcome. Can we go collapse in front of a fan that's in front of an open window now?
Absolutely we can.
Yay!
Skirts shouldn't have epaulettes.
Skirts should not have epaulettes. Those are for shoulders, not for bony hips.
It has been spoken.